Blog Talk Radio.
Network. Fast Forward Radio is an audio production of The Speculist, and you'll find us online at speculist.com. That's S-P-E-C-U-L-I-S-T.com. Or go straight to the blog at blog.speculist.com. At The Speculist and on Fast Forward Radio, we explore a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities which lie at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. And Fast Forward Radio is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead and that will be here sooner than you think. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
I almost said, and for the 250th time, my co-host, co-blogger,
Almost. I've been here for most of the shows, but not all of them. So I don't guess you could say 250.
Oh, that's true. That's
been,
Well, I haven't been here for all of them.
There's probably been a half dozen shows that I was not the co-host on. Probably a half dozen shows. There might have been one or two without you, Phil.
There have been a few without me. There have been a few. There was one you and Michael Darling did, and I managed to call in right at the end. Do you remember that? That was like...
I do remember that.
But most of the shows have been the two of us. By and large, there have been a few variations. I think you and PJ, me and Michael Sargent, me and Michael Darling. But by and
I did one with Michael Sargent, and I've done two or three with Michael Darling.
Yep.
And and I think one or two with PJ without you. But it's we've had a good run with the show and a lot of fun. We just had a lot of fun with it.
We have. Well, but out of 250, I would say a good 235, at least, have had both of us on, right? At least.
At least.
And then that's not even counting all the shows we did before we got to 250. But anyway, all that's to say, tonight's our big 250th edition of Fast Forward Radio here on Blog Talk Radio, and this is part two of our five-year anniversary celebration. We had part one a few weeks ago. PJ Manny joined us, and we celebrated being on Blog Talk Radio for 5 years, and we thought, well, it was a nice combination of records we were hitting, because we were hitting our 250th show right around the same time, so we just make it a two-part celebration. So here we are celebrating part two of our... just I don't know how else to describe it. Total awesomeness, I guess, is pretty much.
in our humble opinion, it's we've been just awesome with the show.
Yeah,
in all seriousness, it has been an awesome time. We've had a good time with this.
It certainly has.
It's not something that you would you just continue doing over and over again and being paid zero money without loving it at the same time. We just had a ball. We've had all these interesting people on talking about things that interest us deeply. And then, of course, even on nights when we don't have a guest, basically we interview each other, and just have a good time doing that, too. So it's been fun all around.
It certainly has. And speaking of interviewing each other, that's exactly what we're going to do this evening. We've got it down to just a few simple questions we're going to pose to each other about how we got to where we are and where we might go next. But before we go there, before we do that, anything interesting going on in your life that you'd like to share before we jump into the main topic of the show this evening?
Well, over the weekend, I caught the James Bond movie, and I highly recommend it to anybody it's a good movie, and I had a good time with that. Completely throw out the normal James Bond formula for a movie. They go their own way on this one, and it's the movie, I think, is better for it. It's an interesting story they tell with this one. And so, I highly recommend it.
I would say the first half is a James Bond movie, and then it kind of turns into a movie about James Bond, which is a really interesting thing.
Because let's face it, we've had 23 movies of James Bond, and we don't know a thing about this guy, hardly. You know, I mean, Yeah. He's this dark guy, his secret of a guy, you know, that he does these awesome things, and we get to see him on the screen doing these awesome things. But, you know, where does he go for downtime? You know, we don't know these things. We really don't. And it reveals a little bit more about this guy. So
I like that. And I'll tell you the other thing I like about it. I just think it's a terrific movie. It's a real love letter to James Bond fans, even though it doesn't follow the formula. There's some terrific stuff in there that longtime fans will really appreciate. But it works completely, as you said, as just a thriller. It's just a really interesting thriller about some really interesting people, and you know, it holds your attention. What I was going to say is that these three most recent movies, Quantum of Solace being kind of the weak member of the trilogy, but from Casino Royale to Quantum of Solace to Skyfall, completes a trilogy same way that from Batman Begins to The Dark Knight to The Dark Knight sequel. I can't remember the title now. That's bad. Completed a trilogy. But that one told the whole story of Batman, and it's like now, you know, you're kind of left with either you're beyond Batman Beyond sort of storyline, or you start over again. This actually cues up, and it's a complete series of stories, and it kind of seals certain things off. But where you end at the end of Skyfall, I don't think I'm spoiling it for anybody here. They're now ready, I think, to do remakes of, you know, Dr. No and Thunderball and all that kind of stuff.
Well, if they wanted to. I kind of doubt that that's the direction they'll go with it. I suspect that what they'll do is, you know, just go in an entirely new direction. You know, they could pick up some of the storyline threads from the first two movies with this organization that was sort of a shadowy organization could become something like Spectre. You know, who knows? There's lots of ways that they could go with it, but I thought it was a brilliant movie. Enjoyed it and highly recommend it to.
Good stuff. Good stuff on the stuff all there. Okay, now I've got something. I don't ever do this. Okay, I've got three young people living here in my home, and by young people I mean three and under. And do I tell cute kid stories on the air, Stephen? Ever? Do I ever do that?
No, you've you know, I've got cute kids too, and I don't think that really comes up all that much.
It's like religion and politics, right? You know, it's like they'd take over the show if we did it. But I'm going to do one tonight anyway because I figure it's our 250th anniversary. So
indulge
yourself. Love this.
Go for it.
Yeah. Okay, so I love it because what it says about let me not ruin it. I'll just tell the story. Okay, so the other day I'm holding my son Khalil, 17 months old. While preparing breakfast, and I'm making scrambled eggs, so I'm breaking the eggs, and I have to do it with one hand because I'm holding a child. And our child care provider comes in right at that moment, and she goes, "Wow, look at you cracking eggs with one hand." And I said, "Yeah, look at me. I can crack eggs with one hand." Turned to my son. I said, "I can crack eggs with one hand. How do you like me now?" And he goes, "Good." So...
Okay.
I just felt like, okay, well, there you go. That's a great response, actually. You know, that's normally given as a rhetorical question, but to him it was like, look, I've been holding out. The jury's been kind of out on you, frankly, Dad. But then, right? But now I see you doing the egg thing. I'm in your camp, basically. It was.
you finally done something awesome. It's so worthy of admiration in his eyes. Well, that's great. That
was my takeaway. So I'm feeling pretty good. You know, I can crack eggs, and I can do 250 podcasts on Blog Talk Radio, and we're ready for the next 2,500. So,
you know how I feel about you, Phil? Good, man.
How do you like me now, Steven?
You were awesome.
All right.
I've been holding out.
Anyway. I didn't know anybody ever got an answer to that question, you know, and I really liked the answer I got. So, okay, well, let's jump into this. I think we've fiddled around long enough. Let's talk about Fast Forward Radio, our 250th show here on Blog Talk Radio, and I want to talk a little bit about how we got started doing this. And I'd like to take this question first, if I may.
Please do. Go ahead.
Because we have to wind it way back, way, way back into the mid to later part of the previous century to get the answer to this question. You know, how did I got to think about, how did I start doing this? How did it come to every Wednesday or Thursday or Tuesday? We've done it Sunday. We've done it lots of different nights. Talking about accelerating change, talking about the technological singularity, talking about the future. How did that become a part of my life? Well, I go all the way back to when I was a kid, and I was really interested in, you know, from earliest childhood, interested in anything mysterious, anything kind of tantalizing. I loved anomalies. I loved the paranormal. I was always, even as a pretty young kid, reading books about UFOs and Bigfoot and the Bermuda Triangle and all that kind of stuff. And I loved science fiction. From a very early age, anything about space and the future was just awesome. Movies, books, TV shows, and books, fiction and nonfiction. Anything I get my hands on that dealt with space, I would read. And as I got a little older, I was heavily influenced by two writers, Isaac Asimov and Robert Heinlein, the Foundation series with the whole idea of psychohistory, and then Heinlein had this whole like future history timeline that he wrote. And you know, it wasn't so much the idea of predicting the future, which is what you get from Asimov, as just this notion that there would be this arc of the future going forward. To me, that was always this really compelling idea that this vast expanse of time lay ahead of humanity. Is something that would just always make me kind of dizzy to think about, the idea that we're living before all these amazing things that are gonna happen later, or that maybe we're even near the beginning of all those things happening. Now, I don't know if this magazine still exists, but in high school, I was a big reader of Starlog. Have you ever heard of that magazine, Stephen?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
I read it whenever I could get my hands on a used copy, usually through the used bookstore that I was that I frequented as a kid. You know, and you could pick up, I could pick up two or three of those for like, I don't know, less than a dollar. You know, I could throw a dollar down and get two or three of those magazines.
There you go. Yeah.
You know,
well, Starlog.
You know, they were, just absolutely falling apart often. But man, you talk about good reading. Had a good time.
Oh, as long as you could read
kid.
It, right? And Starlog was great
yeah.
because it was all about science fiction movies and. A little bit about the comics, a little bit about TV shows, and a little bit about the books, but mostly science fiction movies and TV shows, because it had the Star Trek tie-in. But for a while there, I think in the late 70s, early 80s, they had a feature in Starlog. It was called Future or Future Life, and eventually that spun off into its own separate magazine. And for a while there were these companion publications, Starlog and Future, and I read every issue they ever published, because it didn't last for very long, unfortunately. But I read every issue of I think it was initially called Future and then called Future Life. And I don't remember any of the specifics of anything I read back, you know, years ago. But I was just completely fascinated by it. It was, to me, the most exciting thing every month when the new Future Life was out. I would get my greedy little hands on that and read that. And not too long later, This new magazine, Omni, came out. Bob Guccione, the guy who did Penthouse, comes out with this very slick science and science fiction magazine. And not long after that, he put out a magazine called Longevity, which also, kind of like Future Life, did not last very long. I think it may have just lasted single digits of issues. But and I don't remember the contents of it. I remember reading it, but I don't remember what it said, how we were going to live any longer. But I remember the cover of the first issue, and it had this great headline on it. And the headline was, "Some of Us May Never Die." And that really struck me, because I remember that it was also on the first issue of Omni when it came out. It had that same story, "Some of Us May Never Die." And that was an idea that really stuck with me. Okay, it somehow seemed bigger than most of the other ideas I'd read about the future, stuff I'd read in Future Life or you know, the notion of eliminating mortality, that seemed bigger even than space travel, which was huge to me. To me, space travel was the definitive, ultimate future thing. But here was something, an idea that even transcended that. It was even bigger than that. And it messed with my head, you know, because you start to think about, could the world ever really change that much? Well, okay, so a few years later, I'm at a party. I'm an adult now. And I'm talking with, a friend of a friend, and he's just come back from California, where he's met these guys, and they're talking about this really crazy idea. And I'm trying to piece together what I remembered hearing that night. It was this, some kind of molecular technology that would kind of bring matter to life or let you make anything you wanted. I could not make sense of what the guy was trying to tell me. And so I started talking back to him about virtual reality and holograms, and he said, yeah, it's like that, only more than that. He said, what I'm talking about is computers producing stuff the way they can produce sounds and images. So later, of course, I came to find out that this is called nanotechnology, and I read up on it and learned about it. And it was another one of those, like, transformative moments. It was just this idea that gets in your head. It's an idea that sticks. You think about this and you say, wow, how different would the world be if something like that really existed, if we really had that kind of technology? Well, okay, so fast forward again a few years later. I'm in a discussion on, this really dates me, Usenet. How about that, Stephen? You've heard of Starlog. Do you know what Usenet is?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
I remember it quite well. It was, I was on Usenet myself in the early 90s. Yeah.
For all of our younger readers, Usenet was, I don't know, kind of Facebook. It was the prototype of everything. It's really hard to describe now, isn't it? Basically, it was people. It was a comment thread without there being an original thing, right?
And it just kept going on and on, and it would eventually degenerate into a flame war, and it would die. But
lot of the terminology that we use today on YouTube and Facebook and other places where commenting is a big deal, it derives from netiquette that was developed on Usenet. So I'm in this Usenet group, and I can't remember what the group was, but somebody makes a reference to something called the singularity. And This was interesting to me anyhow, because I've always been interested in astronomy. I'm interested in black holes. And, you know, the singularity is like the most interesting part of a black hole. It's the place where all the laws of the universe and our understanding of things breaks down. It's the really scary part of the black hole past the event horizon. But clearly this individual meant something other than that when he referenced the singularity. And he directed me to an essay by a fellow named Werner Vinge, of whom I was already a big fan, somebody whose work I was familiar with, his science fiction work, but I had never heard of this side of his career. And the essay was entitled "The Coming Technological Singularity: How to Survive in the Post-Human Era." And that is kind of a seminal piece, kind of a definitive work. It's the essay where Vinge writes, quote, "Within 30 years, we will have the technological means to create superhuman intelligence. Shortly after, the human era will be ended." So I read that essay, and my life changed. That, for me, is where a whole lot of strands sort of began to come together. This idea that the future that lies before us could be much bigger than what's come before kind of met up with this idea that even our mortality might be optional. And that kind of joined with this suggestion that we might be able to manipulate the physical world around us in ways that would seem, you know, almost magical. It all came together. All these ideas suddenly came together when I read Vinge's essay. And I couldn't look at the world quite the same way after that. Not that I particularly wanted to look at the world. Because at that point, you've got what I reference at the beginning of the show every week. You've got a future that's almost unimaginable. You've got a set of changes that are almost beyond the imagination. And Vinge is confirming that, yes, that's the future that's coming. But he's not just confirming that. He's telling me that I'm wrong on one point, which is it's not almost unimaginable. It's, you know, completely unimaginable. That's why he used the term singularity. And so when you're faced with this idea of, yes, we are hurtling towards a future that we can't even get our heads around, it was at that point that I realized I had to become involved in all this somehow or other, if only as a witness or, if you will, a speculist to the entire thing. So I started a blog in August of 2003, and that was right at the same time I attended my first ever Foresight Vision Weekend conference. And that really got the ball rolling. I met people. It gave me content and gave me context for what we did in the very earliest days at the Speculist Stephen, you joined, I don't know, shortly thereafter. The Speculous wasn't around for long before you were part of it. When did you start contributing?
In 2004. I started contributing in 2004, yeah.
So, you know, we were up and running, and then Stephen joins. And I would say within a year of your joining, that's when we started doing our original Fast Forward Radio, which we fiddled with for a couple, 3 years,
yeah,
and then we started doing the show.
That's right. And you know, 2005 is when we first started doing this show, and it was just sort of we'll roll it out whenever, you know, we feel the inspiration to do so. And so, you know, we might do one a month. It might then a couple months roll by, and then we decide to do another one. But it wasn't until really we came to this platform with Blog Talk Radio that we really committed to doing it once a week. And that's when it got real for us. It's when we started doing it that often. Unscripted, just having a good time talking about the things that we enjoy talking about. So, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I think we were able to have continuity with the show after we started doing it weekly. In a way that we couldn't when we were doing it so sporadically. When suddenly you'd have Brian Wong on for the fourth or fifth time, and you can make reference to the other times he's been on, you know, suddenly it's, or you have PJ and Brian on at the same time, or all the different combinations of guests that we have. The show just, it really came to life once we started doing it weekly, and it really has become this living and evolving thing, and we'll talk about that a little bit on the second point. But before we do, I don't want to step on your ability, your opportunity to tell us how you got into all this. This is how I got here. Now how did you come to be here, Stephen?
Okay, I think the earliest influence on me as far as having an interest in this sort of stuff, and we're going way back now, 1979, Charles Sheffield published something called How to Build a Beanstalk. Are you familiar with the magazine Destinies? Have you ever?
No.
Okay.
I don't know that.
It's probably pretty obscure. I've literally seen the title just maybe once or twice since getting to sit down and read that particular article. It had this picture, and that got my interest. Now keep in mind, this is 1979, so I'm 9 years old. Okay, so I mean, I had to have something to draw my interest, you know. And it was this picture of, you know, this elevator, you know, space elevator is what it was, going, you know, until it reaches out of sight into the sky. And I'm going, wow, yeah, that's what we need to do. Rockets, that's, you know, why don't we just take an elevator ride to space, you know. And in that article, he explains, you know, here's the strongest materials that we have currently. Here's the tensile strength of what we really need. And he called it fictionite, okay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because no one had any idea what carbon nanotubes were. And,
right.
You know, that's where we're going now with it. And so that just blew me away. That, you know, you're talking about here's the thing that sort of, you know, breaks your worldview in a way. Here's the way things have always been. Wow, it could really get different. You know, I mean, when it's just an elevator ride to low Earth orbit, then outer space becomes a place that we all get to go to. You know, and that sort of rocked me. I guess about the same time, you know, our family got the first home computer, and
uh-huh.
Of course, as with most geeks, you know, I found that it just absolutely, it was like, the computer and I combined. I mean, it was,
yes.
Wow. This was
79. What did you guys get?
TI-99/4A, Texas
wow,
Instruments.
Okay.
And I mean, just love the thing. Made little games, you know, that we shared with other geek friends, and we had a ball with that kind of stuff. And did stuff like that throughout college and stuff. But I guess the next thing that really, I mean, I was well into adulthood, you know, already married, you know, doing my, in law school, really, I believe, was when I read. Ray Kurzweil's The Age of Spiritual Machines.
Okay.
And that's, to me, I go, okay, all right, so I understand now. You know, what we're looking at now, this changing the world so quickly,
is the law of accelerating returns. It made sense to me. It made sense with what I was seeing. But then once you understood the implications of where that's going, you know, it was very much like the experience you had with Bernard Benji. So, and it, once I read that, it wasn't long, you know, before I was looking, you know, look around, find, you know, it's got, you know, this has got to rock the else's world too. And I stumbled upon the Speculus at some point. So that's my history that I got there. So it was, it's been fun ever since. We've had a good time with this.
And then you showed up here and did 250 shows, and that's
yeah, one after another, not all at once.
So the next question is, and I'll let you take this one first, since I hogged the first one. Is we came into this with a certain idea about the future and a certain idea about how things are changing, and to some extent, it's expected that that would evolve over the time that we've spent thinking about it and talking about it. But you know, the question is, what are the biggest changes in how you're thinking about the future over that period of time? How does the future look different to you now than it did even say 4 years ago, even 250 hours of fast forward radio ago? What's one big change in how you look at the future now than how you looked at it then?
I have realized that the way I live my life has to be different because of the direction that the future is going than it would have been otherwise. You know, I mean, the normal path for people in the past, at least, has been, you know, you learn lots and lots of things as a young person, and, you know, that sort of cements who you are. And then you apply those lessons throughout productive years, you know, and you do that until you're too old to be productive and you retire or whatever. That's been kind of the normal path. What I seem to have learned over the course of this show is that, you know, that system is breaking down. Our ability to remain productive depends more and more on the maintaining the plasticity of youth. In other words, we've got to be willing from time to time to slaughter some sacred cows. You need to be able to just say, okay, I know this is the way I've always done it, and you know what? I got to move on from that. I've got to, find, you know, the better way of doing that. So, you know, and the reason is the risk profile is much different than it used to be. You know, the old wisdom was, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, and the reason is that doing something new represented risks that the old method didn't represent. Well, that's not the case anymore, because, you know, there's a unique risk of just sitting on your butt now, doing the same thing over and over until the world passes you by. And so, you know, I guess that's the thing that's come with me, and it's actually been a life lesson for me, is that I've got to learn to do different things and do things in a new way all the time. And it's impacted the way I practice law. I've gone paperless, and I've led the way within the law firm on that issue. And I mean, it's, you know, I credit, you know, contact with a lot of these ideas with doing that. So it's I guess that's how the my thinking has changed the, you know, way.
That's a really
I
good
things.
One. That's a good one. I think about that. It goes against what we're told is human nature, particularly as we get older. We're supposed to be able to get set in our ways, right? We're supposed to be able to settle into the preferred way that we like to do stuff. And there was a time not that long ago when you could do that. You could afford to do that. But today you just don't get the shelf life.
It was probably better to do that.
Yeah,
you know, it
probably was.
You know, it's I'm awesome doing it this way. Don't disturb the way I do it, because, you know, you're just going to mess up my system if you try to teach an old dog new tricks. Now I think we've reached a point where, the old dog better learn new tricks, or he will be left behind by, you know,
well, it's,
a pack
it's
of young dogs that are just passing by. So.
It's approaches. Paradigms, ideas about how to do things are becoming obsolete at the same rate, you know, they're becoming disposable at the same rate the technologies are. And you've got to be able to, you've got to be able to keep up in the same way that you can't, you know, you can't even find a network probably that will support your phone from 20 years ago. The economy or just the world in general isn't going to support a lot of your ideas about how the world works from 20 years ago either. It's that rapidly changing of an environment that we live in. That's a really good example. I've got one that's a little bit related to that, actually, in a strange kind of way. So when I look at how I looked at the future before we started doing this show, or maybe before I started doing the Speculus, now I look at it now. You know, I mentioned in my life I'd had this big revelation, this big realization early on, this idea that the future is this vast segment of history that's in front of us. Kind of this idea that we're in sort of a prologue, that we're in the opening act, or just the very beginning of the story. That the really important stuff that hasn't even started happening yet. And something that has gotten into my head over the years on this show, you know, we've had the privilege of talking to, say, Ray Kurzweil about the law of accelerating returns, or, you know, talk to John Smart about how the whole universe may be developing towards a developmental optimum, as the Evo Devo folks would describe it, or what I call in simpler terms, becoming sexy immortal billionaires with superpowers. When you look at those kinds of changes as part and parcel of this overall evolutionary step or a set of evolutionary steps that we've been taking, then suddenly you have this very different perspective. You begin to see the whole thing much more as a continuous process. And I don't think now that, you know, the future is there and we're not quite there yet. You know, it's this big thing in front of us. I've become really interested in understanding more about how we got to this point. You know, we talk a lot about the past, actually, on this show. You know, we talk a lot about our hunter-gatherer ancestors and our primitive ancestors, and we talk about how technology has progressed and how people were living a century or two ago by way of comparison. That's become a very interesting part of the whole discussion, not just looking ahead. And I think where before I believed that we're here in the present and the future is really out there somewhere, now I kind of see the future unfolding before us every moment. And if you want to know where the future starts, today is the day. That's kind of the big takeaway I've got about the future from doing Fast Forward Radio over the last few years is, you know, when's the future gonna get here? Today. Today is the day that today is the first day of the rest of your life, right? And I think it's that basic idea. If you want to be part of this amazing accelerating future, step into it because it's happening around you right now, and we're in it. We've always been in it. It's kind of like PJ Manny talking about the fact that another word for a transhuman is a human, right? And I think another word for moving into the future is living in the world that we're currently in. And when we start to understand that relationship, I think we're really poising ourselves a lot better for what's going to happen next.
Yeah. And I think the way PJ described that is just worthy of mentioning again. I mean, the reason that being human is being a transhuman is, you know, you wear glasses or contact lenses, well, then you're a transhuman. If you avail yourself of modern medicine in any way or drive a car or use a computer, have a smartphone, you're using tech.
If you cook your food, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, anything. Avail yourself of the wheel. all of these things make life much different from the hunter-gatherer that we really developed to be. You know, at some point we started changing the world around us, and I guess that's really what a transhumanist is.
Yeah, well, it occurred to me, I put this piece up on the H+ site last week, week before last. It was actually about human exceptionalism. But one of the One of the phrases that we use frequently on this show, because we own the domain, worldtransformed.com, is we talk about the world transformed. That's been our special series of shows that we've done a couple of times over the years. And this idea occurred to me that hadn't occurred to me before, which is that actually humanity is the world transformed. You know, that's if you look at humanity not as a species but as a process, that's what we do. We remake the world around us, you know, trying to improve it, you know, for ourselves individually, or, you know, we can have the whole discussion of the human imperative, but we've always apparently been that. We've been that from the earliest days, and that's what's got us here. And if we have this vast future lying out in front of us, it's because that's who we were then, and it's who we are today, and who we're likely to continue to be. So yeah, I give a lot of credit to our even proto-human, transhuman ancestors, even our Australopithecine ancestors, who were awesome transhumans in their own right, I think. Okay, Stephen, do you have another one? Another way you're thinking about the future has changed?
I want just to elaborate a little bit more on the why we have to be willing to change. I mean, each paradigm shift, you know, within my lifetime, has taken a shorter and shorter period of time. You know, when I thinking about, you know, maybe my grandfather's generation or the generation before, you know, you just, you know, you could get used to the way the world was as a young person. And maybe by the time you're retired, you look around and the world's a lot different than it was in my day. And you could cross your arms at your chest and kind of harumph that, you know, you kids have it too easy. But, I mean, it took basically a whole lifetime to get to that point. I guess you know, you could see 30 now harumphing that, you know, why in my day we had PlayStation 1s, you know, and
right.
Sort of,
yeah, exactly.
the world is just changing faster and faster, and you know, we adopted cell phones in record time, and then smartphones, everybody got them like immediately. And it just, that's the way things are going. So, yeah, I mean, I guess stay loose, you know, just be ready to roll with it.
keep rolling with it. Well, let me tell you one of the big things we have to roll with, and this is another, my other big lesson about the future, I think, that I've learned. And it comes from getting a better understanding of a process that I've only just gotten a good word for over the last few weeks, because I've missed this earlier, but our Buckminster Fuller called it ephemeralization. And that is, and I'm quoting here from the Wikipedia article on Buckminster Fuller, the ability of technological advancement to do more and more with less and less until eventually you can do everything with nothing, was the way he put it, which I think is just awesome.
He's talking about physical things, isn't he? He's talking, you know, at one point, in order to write a book, you basically had to cut some trees down, but now we're doing it electronically. Is that the idea?
That's the idea, exactly. That you can do more and more with less and less. You have this incredible leverage. Or, well, you think about the we've done those comparisons between all the bulky equipment back in the 70s you would have had to have owned in order to have what you currently hold in your hand when you walk around with your smartphone. Most of it wouldn't have existed anyway. The capability just didn't exist. But even for the things that do exist, you know, the stereo and the TV and the video camera and all that kind of stuff, they've all been ephemeralized, right? And they've all been collapsed down into this one handy little device that doesn't weigh much and you can put in your pocket if you want to and can do all these incredible things. That is actually one of the great themes of this show. And as far as I can tell, it's a theme that has emerged almost completely unexpectedly. We've written our bits on deindustrialization and things like that, but it's not so much that process of ephemeralization that we're even interested in. It's more the consequences of it. It's what it means to us as human beings. And this is where another thinker comes in, Teilhard de Chardin, in The Phenomenon of Man, or the Human Phenomenon, it's sometimes translated. He doesn't use that word. He doesn't say ephemeralization. He talks about the humanization of the universe. And to me, that's the key, because you know, what I think we're tracking, let me take some liberties with Buckminster Fuller, because I think the real formulation is this. It's the ability of technological advancement to do more and more with less and less until eventually anybody can do anything. But to me, that's the real kicker, okay? We've talked about capability being passed from the hands of big institutions down to smaller businesses down to eventually individuals. And, you know,
and not just individuals like you and me, Phil, here in the United States, but individuals throughout the entire world. It's a huge, you know, the effect on the entire world in that, you know, now that these capabilities are being handed to individuals, it seems like, you know, people in developing portions of the world are getting it just as fast as anyone else. And
that's right.
That's huge. And it the entire world gets to benefit from the genius in Africa that would have, you know, he would just have been, you know, subsistence farmer perhaps, you know, 20 years ago. Now we get to benefit. We all get to benefit from the brilliance of people everywhere that the world would have missed out on.
That's right. Well, we all get to become capable of doing more things, and we're all gaining capability at an accelerating pace. It's really
right.
An amazing thing that's happening, and it's going largely unnoticed in the world. But
the
technology that's available
too.
To us – I'm sorry, Stephen?
I was just going to say, and let me make the counterpoint too.
Okay.
You know, it's not just the individual genius that we all get to benefit from, you know, because – in some ways, you know, everybody has some little piece of genius that they can contribute, even if they're, you know, not that bright of a bulb. You know what I'm saying? The fact that everybody is a part of this soup, you know, that the internet connects us in these ways. Anyone can contribute to, you know, the human enterprise in astounding ways. You know, are very small ways, but you still are contributing, and that's you know, I that's just as important as connecting with the genius we would have passed up on, the single individual genius that we would have missed. That the fact that, you know, the collective intelligence of the entire world is connected now.
Yeah, well, we all get to be geniuses in a sense. We all get to potentially make a small or maybe even a large contribution that before we couldn't have, because we didn't have the leverage, we didn't have the capability to do those kinds of things, and that capability is increasingly falling into our hands. So if you wonder how we're going to get from where we are right now to use, you know, Brian Wong's term, the next big future, well, it's like we all have to start asking ourselves, how am I going to get there, right? How am I going to get all of us there? Because each of us potentially, I think, has a role to play in that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one more thing I want to say about ephemeralization or humanization, the end game of that. If we're really heading towards a world where anybody can do anything, then we're actually on a threshold of an era when we meet not only all of humanity's physical needs, but we enable any human being to have any subjective experience they can imagine having. We don't usually come right out and say it in those terms, but that's what we're ultimately talking about. And if you want to put that in less technical terms, all your dreams can come true. All your wishes can be fulfilled. Anything you want to have happen can happen. And we're not that far off. I'm not saying that will happen. I'm saying that our future infrastructure will allow it. I'm sorry?
No, I agree completely. And you talk about a bright future ahead for us. It's remarkable. And you know, behind sort of our slogan has been live to see it. And this is not something that we're talking about 300 years from now. This is something that we really believe that we're going to live to see, in part because we believe our lives are going to be made longer by the technologies that are going to be rolling out in the next 20 years. But also because the next 20 years, I mean, themselves, things are going to be happening faster and faster and faster, to the point that, you know, it's every day we wake up, we realize it's the future because something new has happened. You know, it's hard to deny that You know, the future is happening in front of your eyes when it's always new and always something you can't even hardly keep up with anymore.
Absolutely, and I think to me, if I just sum up all my lessons about the future from the show, it comes down to individual people. That's my biggest takeaway of all, is that the future is not about humanity. Of course, it is about humanity, and it's not about the universe, although, of course, it is about the universe. But it's about individual people who are making that happen, and it's about how each of us potentially benefit from that. Each of us get to participate in that, and each of us potentially have a really huge role to play in that. The idea of being a sexy immortal billionaire isn't with superpowers isn't just a clever title. It's kind of almost a responsibility to have to live up to, you know.
Well, the Singularity University, I mean, that's what you're saying. It just absolutely echoes exactly what, you know, basically you come into the Singularity University there, okay? You know, they sit you down for like orientation or whatever. And the first thing, you know, the guy walks out and says, okay, your responsibility here as a student here at Singularity University is to create an enterprise. You know, it could be a public, it could be a profit, it could be a nonprofit, it could be, you know, whatever, foundation, whatever. But your responsibility as a student coming out of here is to create an enterprise that changes the entire world.
Right.
And how are you going to do that? And so, and let's talk about it. And I mean, they get engaged to, you know, to really accomplish those things. And so that's in a way, we've kind of been we've kind of had our own little Singularity University with all the visiting professors coming in and everything else, and it's been quite a ride.
It certainly has. Well, let's talk now. We got a few minutes left here. What's next? And when you and I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, we said let's think in terms of achievable goals. So I've got some philosophical goals, some things, just, you know, drawing from the lessons learned, how we might want to do it, and I've got some logistical ideas too, some things we might do with the show itself. So I'll start with the philosophy, and I think that it would be a good idea for the show to become much more focused on that idea of humanizing the future, of making people aware of the second point that I just made, talking to them realistically about what they can do and should do, okay, not just to get ready for the future, but to actually bring the future about. I think what we want to do with this show is we want to help equip people to live to see it. So, you know, we talk about it being your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead and that will be here sooner than you think. I want to provide you your guide to that, and I want to nudge you to get started, folks. And I want to get started. I want you to get started. I want all of us to get started on actually making these things happen. So I think it's not a huge change. It's probably just kind of a focusing, kind of a sharpening of what we've been saying all along that we can take into our next 250, 500, 2,000 shows.
Awesome. Well, achievable goals. We've had outstanding guests. I don't know that we could have gotten a better guest roster. I would like to maybe have guests a little more often. You know, I think that is a goal. You know, the world transformed. We've had two of those. I think this coming summer it might be time to do it again. I have the third world transformed. I think that would be awesome. You know, at some point, I would love to see a Fast Forward Radio become, you know, to be broadcast at some point. You know, hit the actual radio waves. I'd love to see that. But those are some goals I'd like to see. They're, you know, less philosophical, but that was my thinking.
Well, I like those. As far as like logistical goals, I am completely on board with you. You know what we need? When you talk about, it would be great if we had guests more often. We got two Frasers here and no Roz, okay? We need a producer on this show, right? I mean,
we sure do.
I do some of the producer responsibilities. You do some of the producer responsibilities, but we really like hosting it. I mean, that's, you know, we like developing the material and hosting the show. We're probably not as good at scheduling. I mean, it is a huge effort for me to put on something like The World Transformed. I'd love to have somebody who is good at organizing that kind of stuff. I think if we could find a resource who would want to take on that job, who would be right for it, you know, philosophically, who agrees with what we're trying to do with the show, I think we'd be in good stead probably to have guests on, you know, every other week would probably be a good goal for that. And we could blow the doors out of something like The World Transformed. I mean, there are so many interesting people that I'd like to have involved in a series like that. And we could do, you know, we've typically done 10 shows, 10 90-minute shows, but you could do 20 over the course of a summer and never run out of interesting people to talk about, never run out of topics to do something like that on. I think where it falls down and what we maybe want to think about doing is getting somebody to take over that role for us for our next 250 shows and beyond. Here's an achievable goal I had, and I'm just going to throw this one out. You know, it took us 4 years to get to 250 shows. Now, if we were ambitious, we might consider getting to 500 in the next 2 years. Okay, let's throw that one out there. Or maybe thinking about getting to 1,000 shows over the next 4 years, right, which would be operating at the same pace, but it's like doubling production. Now, there's various ways we could do that. Obviously, it involves doing more shows. That's, you know, there's no way to get there without doing more shows. But ways we could do that would be to be on a couple of nights a week, possibly to do shorter shows. We could do 2 half-hour shows a week, something like that, maybe 2 45-minute shows. We could bring in additional hosts. So there would always be 2 of the 3 on every week. So each person involved wouldn't have to be doing 2 shows a week. There's different ways it could happen, right? And I think it's something that we should think about doing, because I think as we noted earlier, the show really came to life once we started doing it weekly.
Yeah.
Would it just supercharge if we started doing it twice a week? And I don't know. I'm throwing that out there. What do you think?
Perhaps. We might, think about maybe having trying it out where we have like a guest show and then followed by just you and I chatting about, you know, the guest earlier in the week. We might try, you know, maybe having a weekend show and then a midweek show, something like that. We might, let's explore that idea. That might be
fun, because, you know, that weekend show, we do it late at night, and we get into the real Tales of the Paranormal and stuff like that, you know. And
Right. We'd go back to our one of our inspirations for the show. I never can remember the name of that show. Coast to Coast. Yeah.
Coast to Coast, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
We'll start trotting out some of that stuff. Well, like I said, I was very interested in that as a child. I could go on about those topics all night. I'm a big fan of. Do you watch that show? What's it called? Hunting Bigfoot, Finding Bigfoot.
Actually,
we'll have to talk about that
sometime.
Hey,
yeah.
Sally just noted that, of course, she is the chat room host. So it's not like we do this completely alone. Without
true.
Sally in the chat room, this thing would be much less than the experience it is. Sally, we so appreciate having you here. It's great every time I look in the chat room and I see these amazing discussions going on, often somewhat related to what we're talking about.
Every now and then, there's some correlation between.
There's an interesting sort of parallelism, where you can see how it started off with something we did, and it went its own direction, which is really kind of a cool organic thing. But shout out to Sally. It's been great having you part of this thing, Sally, and we look forward to having you here for the next 250 shows and beyond. Now, here's the other thing I want to mention about the possibility of, and I know we're running close on time. The other thing I want to mention about the possibility of doing more shows is that the audience really seems to like what we're doing. We've had more than 5,000 listeners per week consistently over the past 5 months. And you know what, Stephen? Half of those shows had more than 10,000 listeners, and we had one that broke the 20,000 listener mark. So another possible goal might be to get that number up to something like 25K a week, maybe 50K a week. What's possible? I don't know. It seems to me that our big listener influx started when we started promoting heavily on Facebook. So I think if we bring a producer on and we get really serious about promoting the show on social media, those kinds of numbers could be achievable. And if they are, then the kind of thing you're talking about where we ultimately it's as simple as this. There is a number somewhere. There's a level of interest that would finally get the attention of Sirius or a broadcast outlet. And I think we can move in that direction. The way we move in that direction is we get a little more organized, maybe with some additional organizational support. Maybe we do it more frequently, and maybe we promote it a little harder. Those are my realistic goals that I think would give us, I think, some real energy and real excitement over the next, I'm going to say the next 750 shows to get us to 1,000. That's what I'm excited about. I'm interested in doing 3 times as many as we've done and putting the planet Saturn up there with a 1 and 3 zeros up on up on Facebook. I think that's going to be great. Well, I think those are good goals, and we'll continue to talk about working towards those. I know you've got music queued up for us, Stephen, but I didn't mean to cut you off. Did you have some other goals that you wanted to discuss before we call it quits?
I think that's it. We get organized, we get a producer, and we think about whether we want to do it in different formats, and I think we should toy around with our format just a little bit. You know, I would take my own advice. Let's not get stuck in a rut necessarily just because we've done it this way and had a good time doing it this way. We might enjoy it and actually, reach a larger audience if we change up the way we do things. So let's do it.
All right. So. We'll do it. That'll be our plan going into going into the rest of this year and into 2013. All right, Stephen, what's our music this evening?
The music tonight is So Wonderful, Beautiful by Parker.
All right, Parker singing So Wonderful, Beautiful. Well, Stephen, thank you very much for putting that together. Great talking with you as always. Thank you all for being with us. Terrific chat going on. Everyone listening live and everyone listening via MP3, thanks for being part of Fast Forward Radio. We'll be back with our 251st show next week at the regular time. We hope you'll be with us. And until next time, live to see it.
Tell it when she'll be here till the bitter end. Oh, go. light, she's not there. Before it all disappears, she is so beautiful. Don't let it slip away. She is so beautiful. Don't you let it slip away. So wonderful, beautiful. Just one flash of light, she's not there.